through the Australian Hotels Association. And we're joined by the CEO, Bradley Woods. G'day, Brad.
G'day, Chris.
We might be seeing some sort of common sense in this, because I must say that, bearing in mind that we seem to have so many inconsistencies with restriction, for you and your members, it must still be proving somewhat frustrating at this point.
Extremely frustrating. You've only got to walk into any of the major shopping centres and see people absolutely crowded in against each other, or into somewhere like a department store or IKEA or somewhere, and then reflect that against we're only allowed to have a quarter of the capacity, up to 20 people, of what we used to be able to have.
I know, up to 20 people. I use the example, which, because we spoke to them, of the Windsor Hotel, which can hold 2,000 people. Yet, yep. Funnily enough, earlier this week, we started to hear noises about how more people can ride on public transport. Well, I'm sorry, if a bunch of strangers can pack the train and a bunch of strangers can pack into the shopping centre, why can't we have more than 20 people in a venue that could hold 100 times that many?
We haven't been given an answer on that, and we're waiting for government to help us on that, because apparently it's the health department that don't want people going out and socialising or enjoying themselves in restaurants.
Well, that's all good, because the bureaucrats in the health department don't have their income and livelihoods under threat, nor have they been asked to take pay cuts, nor have they had to apply for JobSeeker or JobKeeper.
Unfortunately, you're probably right, Chris. I have a lot of respect for the Chief Medical Officer and the Chief Health Officer of WA, but at this point in time, we are devoid of any guidance or advice from them.
Well, the problem is they're not being consistent. If this social distancing, using the formula that is applied to your members, is accurate and correct, then it also has to apply on public transport. Even if that flies in the face of the mantra that the government wants to have more people on public transport, and even if that causes commuting problems because less people ride public transport because of those rules, either way, it either is or it isn't. The problem is we seem to be half wet and half pregnant, which is just nonsense. It literally cannot go on, because the message, apart from anything else, I think is confusing to people generally.
Absolutely, and there's tens of thousands of people who can't return to work in the hospitality sector until such time as we get rid of this one in four square metre requirement, that people can't go into a venue of any more than 20 people as well. So even if we moved beyond 20, up to 50 or 100 or 200, it wouldn't make much difference because of the one in four square metre requirement.
And the other problem is that you then have people who have to somehow police this rule. So it's always good that people make these rules. What they do is make the rules, and they're never the ones who have to police them. And people who are not qualified and don't have any authority are also the ones who are expected to police it. It's just insane.
It is very frustrating, and the industry is trying to work through this. We're trying to work through these issues as we speak. There's lots and lots every day. There are dozens and dozens of meetings and conversations taking place. But what we keep getting told is that health don't agree. But they do agree about crowding in public transport.
Well, that's fine, because government wants that to happen. Otherwise, yep, people might drive on the roads, and then they've got another problem. The volume of cars on the roads causing congestion, and then the problem with parking at the other end. It's amazing how, if the government's involved in something that might potentially be a problem, it always seems to find a solution. But it can make an arbitrary decision about many of your members who've got their houses and God knows what else mortgaged to try and keep their business running. Well, that's okay. And unfortunately, I get back to what I said before. These health bureaucrats making these decisions aren't worried about how they're going to pay their mortgage, because they're on full salary, and they always have been. And they're also not worried about their job disappearing tomorrow because the business is no longer viable.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, look, Chris, I have to be diplomatic about these things.
I know you do. I don't.
We are fighting the fight behind the scenes to try and open the doors a bit more, to allow the public to come in without having to be limited to going out once a month because they can't get a booking, or being required to queue up, on the footpath in the rain, standing, one centimetre from each other.
That's right. They'll all get pneumonia. I mean, that's okay. And look, I appreciate that you're being diplomatic, as you have to be. For me, I must say, I enjoy the luxury of not having to be diplomatic. The Detect snapshot program they're talking about, how is it that you hope this somehow is going to work to persuade, I guess, as much as anything, the health bureaucrats that there is actually a case for allowing more people into entertainment venues? And I should point out at this point, many entertainment venues haven't opened because the maximum number of 20 at any given time does not make it financially viable for them to do so.
Yeah, so it's hospitality venues across the board. It's pubs, large restaurants, bars, anyone that's got a substantial venue that really, at the end of the day, 20 people doesn't even warrant opening the doors because it's just unaffordable to maintain the services. What we're saying is that not only do we need an increase in the numbers, but we've welcomed any opportunity to prove to state government and demonstrate through a broader level of testing that there is not a COVID-19 spread within the community. Now, the whole point of us having the shutdown in the first place was to ensure that the state's health system didn't get overrun in the event the virus got out of control and the queue or the demand for intensive care services and respirators was greater than the state could accommodate. The intention of the shutdown was not to have zero cases throughout the state, but that's where we are right now. The agenda seems to have changed and the desire is to have zero cases. So if through our staff in hospitality industry voluntarily providing swabs and samples, as do a range of other sectors that were announced today, we're very happy to support that, so as to ensure that health can be comfortable that they're achieving the world's best, just so that we can put that in an academic paper to say that we've achieved the world's best COVID-free environment. And then someone will get a nice big tick and their name will be in big bright lights in an academic journal somewhere.
It's incredible, though, while we're having this conversation, what's happening is people's livelihoods are being played with.
Destroyed,
this,
absolutely.
This is the thing that amazes me. We've got a whole bunch of these bureaucrats sitting there in their comfortable jobs that are guaranteed, and they're making these arbitrary decisions which could have a profound effect on some people. We're talking about people potentially losing their houses. Has anyone ever talked about the mental health implications of the impact this is having on both those business owners and people who work within the industry who are not, generally speaking, highly paid people anyway? No. Has anybody had that conversation? I don't think they have. I know you have, Bradley, but yes. I mean, people within government haven't had that conversation.
No, but if you're an academic and all you're trying to prove is that your thesis of getting zero cases throughout the state has been achieved, they don't really care about the human consequence here. Now, what we're saying is that there is a much broader damage to society and damage to the infrastructure and damage to people's livelihoods and mental health that's occurring by the shutdown of hospitality businesses across the state. And they already have people who have lost everything as a result of this shutdown. There are businesses and individuals who have already lost their financial savings, have lost the business, and in some circumstances, far more than that. And I don't want to get into that right now, but, you know, it is an unfortunate reality of all of this, Chris.
Of course it is. And these things need to be factored. But what amazes me is it seems in some areas there hasn't been a problem. But in other areas, there is a problem. So what makes an entertainment venue any different to a shopping centre, any different to public transport, or any different to anywhere else where volumes of people may congregate? What is it that suddenly makes them different? If you're a restaurant or you serve food, you've always maintained a standard of hygiene anyway. Otherwise, the local government health inspector has come down on you. There's all sorts of factors that are at play here, and you look at your industry and say, well, actually, this is an industry that is pretty good at looking after itself because it has to clean up its venues, it has to keep them clean. Otherwise, people don't go there anyway.
And we've got a very good track record of doing that comparative to other countries where there is far more extensive foodborne diseases that are transmitted. And what we're talking about here is basically common sense around personal hygiene, about coughs and sneezes and maintaining social distancing and washing hands and sneezing into elbows and all of those factors. We are very mindful of that. I'm not seeing it policed, as you've said, in other large gathering areas.
Simply because it can't be. They're expecting you to do what other people are not being expected to do.
Correct. And that is what is so unfair about this, and it is costing people their livelihoods. It is costing young people their hope in future of work and their prospects for a career in their industry as well that they've chosen.
Brad, this new testing program, how is it going to work in hospitality venues, and how do you hope that somehow you're going to be able to use it to convince the authorities that this is actually a good watershed to say we can let more people into our venues?
So we support the premise that the state government has adopted, and that is the more people are tested, the more demonstration there can be that there is no community spread of COVID-19 within the community. And if that can be achieved, we are a long way down the path then of demonstrating that we can get a lot closer back to normal than otherwise. So what the government has announced is that free testing will be available for a range of industries, including hospitality. All that has to happen is someone who has returned to work in hospitality shows their ID or a payslip, and they are provided then at a testing centre with a free test. It's noted in relation to what sector that they work within, and the data is then collected by the state government. And that's an important step towards, I think, providing a satisfaction that those staff who work in the industry that are asymptomatic, that is, they may have the virus but don't demonstrate any symptoms, could be picked up. Now, we're hoping, obviously, that there are no asymptomatic people out there, because if there are, then we're all in trouble. It doesn't matter where they work or what they do, but we appreciate that hospitality workers are in the front line and they are in contact with consumers, and we want to make sure that we're working with a safe environment and that our staff are safe and healthy as well.
Yeah, I just wish everything would be kept in perspective, because right now the total number of infections, and this comes from the Health Department's website, by the way, the total infections as a percentage of the population, 0.02.
Yeah.
Total number of infected patients who've recovered is 96.3%. Total percentage of patients remaining infected at the moment is 2.1%. The percentage of patients who died of COVID-19, 1.58%. The overwhelming majority came from either overseas travel or cruise ships. A further 11% as a result of close contact with those who came from overseas travel or cruise ships. And 1.5% came from interstate travel. So let me put that another way. If you were one of the 0.02% of Western Australians who are unlucky enough to contract COVID-19, your chances of death were 1.58%. So 1.58% of 0.02%. If you needed an operation and your doctor gave you those odds, I think you'd take them quite comfortably.
Some people will call it 6/5 of nothing, or whatever that expression is. And I think it's so low. It is beyond the realm of understanding as to why, when there is clearly no community spread, we are maintaining the excessive restrictions on the state. And so, you know, our call to government is, yep, move forward, but do it at a greater pace. Don't go silly. Don't go out of control. Let's be calm about this, but extend the numbers to allow businesses to get reopened, not at the stage where they can't afford to reopen or they're choosing not to reopen because the numbers are so low. And it's not just about the employment. It's not just about businesses being open, but at the end of the day, it's about the public getting a service that they're also looking for as well. And we know that with only 20 per venue, the vast majority of West Australians can't get out and about and can't get into a restaurant and can't get into a cafe or a pub or anywhere they want to be. And so, look, it's also about us, you know, having the right to be able to do that. And, you know, I had my first coffee in a cafe today for a meeting that was, you know, not at home or in my office. It was nice to do that, and I can't wait to actually have a meal in a pub or in a hotel or in a bar or a restaurant. I haven't done that yet, Chris, because I've thought
like to be able to do that. Yep. You're dead right. Brad Woods, thank you very much for your time. You know it's much appreciated.
Pleasure, Chris. And look, thank you very much for covering this and respecting the work that people in our industry are doing. And let's hope we can get back on track really soon.
Absolutely. Bradley Woods is the CEO at the Australian Hotels Association.